Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your guys' host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. It's a wonderful guest on the show today, folks. We have Thomas Perkins on the show. Thomas is a character artist from all over animation, from DC, Marvel, indie, so many different things. You know, his work you've definitely seen if you've had a damn childhood. So thanks, everyone, for tuning into this episode. It's really motivational, inspirational to artists all over the place, really. You know, especially artists who draw, but then also writers and whatever, maybe actors, whatever it is for creators out there, you're really going to take something from this episode, I think. So if you guys do like this episode, tune in more. You know, we have new episodes every Monday morning. And for you guys, every week, we have a new episode. Unless the world ends, but who knows. You guys can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or comiccronicle.podbean.com. And you guys can get a new show every Monday. Sometimes it may be a review. Most of the time, we bring on some really fun guests like Thomas today. So, leave a review too, and you know, we definitely appreciate it over here, because this is a Nerd of Balls production, we appreciate the reviews. So thanks everyone for tuning in, of course. And now, without me blabbering on anymore about this episode and how great it is and how cool Thomas is, here is my talk with Thomas. And we're recording. Now Thomas, man, I'll say officially on record, welcome to the show.
Why, thank you, sir.
Of course. As we were just talking about before we started recording, yeah, like, every job matters, and I really think your job matters a lot, too. Like, I've had only one other character artist on the show, and that was a while ago. We had one of the X-Men Evolution character artists on the show.
Oh, nice. And nice. Was that Steve Gordon?
Yes, it was. Let's see, I was seeing if you knew his name. You do. Good.
I do. We worked together on a few shows.
Oh, shit.
One of them being, he was a director at the time I worked with him on Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Oh.
So he directed a number of episodes that I was working on, and so I got to work with a fellow from that fine esteemed show of the X-Men that I also enjoy. So
that leads me to ask him, Thomas, is the world of with what you guys do in your department, is it kind of like voice acting and a lot of other things where it's closed circuit? I'm very curious to hear that, because if you know him,
I wouldn't say it's as closed a circuit, say, as voice acting. I mean, and I have no real input on the voice acting thing, so it may be more wide open than it appears. But no, I think with character design, I mean, there, or any part of animation, quite frankly, I think there is a certain thing to be said for people going, oh, I worked with that person, why don't we bring them? I think they're a good fit for this or that. But if a person's portfolio is strong enough or catches the eye of the right person, you might have people fresh out of art school, or junior college, or whatever you have it, if they have a strong enough book, they could get a gig working.
That's true.
I met a fellow recently who just pitched a show to Netflix, and his resume in animation as a whole is probably very small in comparison to a lot of people I've worked with, but the work he had caught the eye of somebody that, you know, I really like that. I want more of that. Mm-hmm. And thus, it happens. So there is a lot to be said for history and working with people and building those relationships, but there's also a huge amount of importance placed on what is in your portfolio. What do you bring to the table? Because if your portfolio is strong enough, you can leapfrog a lot of folks.
That's true. Oh, God, yeah. Like, honestly, I've said the same about VFX and the film industry I work in, too, but dear God, you artists, and the artist who does my work, shout out to you, Paul Trinidad, because you guys do black magic. I swear to God, I have no idea. It's just magic to me. I make the damn blob out of plastic bags for shit, all right? Like, I don't know how you guys do it. It's seriously black magic.
Well, I think everybody has a skill doing something, because Lord knows if the sciences were left up to people like me, we'd live in very fancy caves. However, I think each creative endeavor has a certain amount of that magical thing that happens with it, where the people and their love of what their craft is and their ability to dedicate themselves to learning that craft can do things that may seem wildly improbable with your skill set. But to them, it's sort of their rigor. They're like, oh, yeah, I do this, and I do this, and I do this, but it's a lot of discipline. So I've seen people do astounding things, but I know it's because of the sweat of their brow and their hard work. Because the truth is talent is great. It's a wonderful parlor trick. But if you don't put in that effort to keep learning and doing new things and stretching and putting yourself in outside your comfort zone to learn new stuff, that kind of magic is more rare than not.
It's true. And the wise words of Jor-El, keep testing your limits.
Exactly. There you go.
You knew immediately the fucking quote. Immediately once I said Jor-El, you're like, yep.
I am something of a nerd. So it has been a job asset over the years. But
get out. You're a nerd? Oh, shit.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
What?
My Instagram alone is an unhealthy preponderance of Batman in it.
Is there such a thing that's an unhealthy amount? Okay, I'm just going to say that, but I'm going to get so much fan mail saying, yes, there is. It's called Hollywood. Like, fair enough. I get that, but...
You know. So there you have it. But, you know, it's one of those things where, fortunately, as a childhood comic book nerd, I was able to find something that would allow me to feed my children in my latter youth. And so being able to do animation and whatnot like that... has been one of those things. It's been a blessing to be able to take that nerddom and use it in a professional fashion.
Which is the goal, which is the dream. You're like, it's seriously the dream. If you do it, if other people look at you like, oh, you're the enigma in the world, like, goddamn right I am. <It's> like, you're seriously
well,
right.
You know, I think we're all nerds for something. I mean, Lord knows. Yeah. You know, there's people who know a lot more about their nerd fandom, say, in, say, fantasy football than I'll ever know about Spider-Man, and I know a ton about Spider-Man. Okay. But, you know, but we all have our things we're nerds for, and so fortunately I was able to turn mine into a career.
I'll give you a good example of this. It's a really good example, and it's one that I'm going to even tell my grandkids, and if I have one day, which step one, I got to get a girlfriend or a wife, but the other subject there. So we live in a world, my grandmother's a nerd, right? She's a nerd. In a sense where she loves housing stuff. She knows all about it. And shout out to you, Rita Morgan. And she loves it all. But here's the thing, too, is that this nerd of housing stuff and roosters and food a little bit, she's also a big-time nerd in Batman. Because she knows Ra's al Ghul. She knows his kid, or Ra's al Ghul, whichever you want. And she's like, whenever she sees Ra's or Ra's, like when he was in Gotham, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm here and whatnot. She turned to look to me, and she's like, can we expect Talia al Ghul in here? I'm like, oh, my God, we live in such a good time to be alive.
That's your grandma?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'd be like, wow, she's cool.
Yeah. It's such an amazing time. And she's also in the realm of spectrum here. That this is just an example, folks, of that we live in a good time to be a nerd because we grew up watching VHS of Toho Godzilla movies. I grew up with her all the time. She loved watching them. It went when King of the Monsters was announced. I don't think they announced the monsters yet. I told her there was one coming out. She said, are they going to put Mothra in it? Like, okay. Well, Grandma, you've won the Nerd Award for the year, and I congratulate you.
Say your grandmother has a certain amount of undeniable street cred in the nerd world.
She does. It's crazy.
I bow for her wisdom. Yeah. And Mothra is pretty cool, so what can you do with that, right?
That's true. So that's the beautiful part about it is there is so many outlets that you can take a look at. You can be like, oh, my God, yeah, and there's so many nerd things. But the few of us who are able to turn it into a career like yourself and myself, you know, it's possible. People still look upon it like it's not, depending where you're at.
Well, but it's true. Possible. I mean, there are certain areas where it's easier to find gigs to do your outlets, to do your gigs and whatnot like that. But yeah. I think... The thing about, because of the internet and whatnot like that, is say if you want to do a webcomic or you want to do this or do that to get your idea, your IP out there, it's a lot easier today than it ever was when I was a youth, when you basically had to hope a publisher would think your vision was cool and they'd throw some money at it and whatever. Now, you may not, through webcomics, initially make that $1 billion or whatever because you're in a sea of other people competing to get eyes on their stuff, but the sheer fact that you can get eyes on your stuff no matter where you are,
yeah,
you know, if you're some kid and you know the off on the tundra in Canada, you're just as able to get a webcomic up to be seen by the whole world as if you're living in New York or LA or anywhere else.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty great. So if you are a person of ambition and you want to get your image and your story and your characters out there, it's almost easier now than ever before. I mean, as I say, you are competing with a lot of other people in that field, but with any luck, that competition will only make your stuff stronger because you're striving against all these other things.
As a guy who's doing a webcomic right now, or actually three, soon to be four, I can't announce any more than that. That hit me right in the heart. I'm not going to lie, Thomas. You got me right in the feels, man, more than Marley and me. Like, it's, but I like to look upon it as, too, if, like, you do have those eyes and whatnot, too, but you also never know who's looking at it. You never will know.
For sure.
And also, the other thing you got to look upon, listeners at home, wherever you may be, whatever you may do, because we have listeners all over the place doing all sorts of things, is maybe you don't get that many eyes on it at first, or it takes a while, or you just have a few in general on it. You still made something. You still did something. You went out there, you created a comic, or you created a damn film, you created an art piece, you created a portfolio as an artist, you know, or as a writer, a reel, whatever it may be. You still made that thing. You're still out in the bracket, still there doing something. And I think people often forget that. They're like, it's all about the likes. No, it's somewhat.
Actually, I have to say, the point you make is perfect, because the truth of the matter is any number of people out there you will come across who say things like, I coulda, I almost, I whatever.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If you make a webcomic and 10 people see it, but those 10 people love it, you never know. That may inspire that one of those 10 people to be, you know, go do something else. And I know that may not be the be-all, end-all of what one's ambitions are. But by the sheer virtue of creating whatever that is, your chances of having it go somewhere go up exponentially, because a lot of people, they never get off the mark of going, hey, I coulda. Well, that's cool, but it's the people who take it that next step and have that dedication, that drive to suddenly go, you know, I'm going to make the best whatever comic that I can imagine, or app, or this or that or whatever. And whether people like it or not, I mean, that's the risk anybody takes in the arts. It's like, you know, not everybody's going to create the Ninja Turtles.
No.
Not everybody's going to create Hellboy. Not everybody's going to create, you know, some iconic lightning in a bottle character. I mean, and you'll see people then follow after them and do their best to replicate whatever that formula is. Yeah. But it's the sheer fact that somebody had enough of a vision to go, you know, I want to make this thing. Like, if you'd have told me back in the days when I was like a huge Burn fan and reading X-Men and this and that and the other thing, that I would be out of my head for a black and white indie comic about Ninja Turtles, I'd have thought you were high. And yeah. What's more, when they first came out, I'll be honest with you, I couldn't even say the name properly because it was seen as this big long thing. I'd mix it up and whatever. However, I became obsessed with Ninja Turtles. I thought they were the coolest thing ever. But that's because those two guys in New England thought, you know, I want to make a thing. And hopefully it'll go somewhere. And Lord knows it's gone all kinds of places. And damn near conquered the world on a number of occasions. And part of my career actually did work for Ninja Turtles myself. Mm-hmm. So to see something where two comic book nerds in New Hampshire suddenly created something that probably changed the world for lots of people, that's pretty neat.
Yeah. You just never know what that one small idea may take you. You never know where that next thing, you know, that small little afterthought you had, write it down. Especially if you're creative, like, always carry pen and paper with you. Especially for you, Thomas, because you're a damn artist. That's always like, I want to sketch something really fast.
I always have at least two or three sketchbooks and a whole stack of post-it notes in my pocket, because at any moment, I might want to draw something. The truth of the matter is, nothing sucks worse than having a brainstorm and the only thing you got is a pencil and a napkin, because those things are terrible to draw on.
It's so true. I've had so many meetings at like a Denny's or something like that. Like,
yeah, and you're like, I'm gonna draw on this napkin. Oh, this is garbage, and I've just destroyed the napkin, and it doesn't come through anyway.
Fuck. I want to give you, there's no way, you must have heard of this, or at least have one of this beautiful invention made for artists. It's a new thing. It's not really new. I've heard about it for about a year or two. I always recommend it to every artist, guy, or gal I know. Sketchbook wallet.
I've heard of the sketchbook wallet. I don't possess one because I have so many sketchbooks. But you enjoyed the sketchbook wallet thing, hey?
Every artist I've known that's an indie folk, they always have at least one, or they have had one, because it's so much easier to use. It's a little bit bigger than your normal wallet, just a little bit though, but it's so much easier. It's like you don't have to carry a bag around. It's just your wallet. Like, okay, it zips up. I mean, then again, if you lose your wallet, you're completely fucked. But besides the point there, you know?
These are these modern first world problems we have.
There's so many people turning in their grave or listening to the show, like on a battlefield somewhere, like, hey, piece of shit. Fighting a revolutionary war over here. What are you doing? Talking about a sketchbook wallet.
I'm fighting against the hordes of evil, and you're complaining about your wallet, bastard. You soft sock bastard. However, that being said, you ever try to have to replace everything in your wallet? Ah, it's a nightmare.
Oh my god, it's why, like, I move heaven and earth to find the one when it gets lost. What happened? Well, you need to find your glasses.
It's even worse if you have a sketchbook wallet, because, like, if you're one of those people that has, like, say, that lighting your bottle thing, and then you accidentally leave your sketchbook on the roof of your car and drive off.
And then
you wonder, oh my god, where'd it go? Oh dear god, it fell off the car!
The worst nightmare. Someone finds, like, a producer, if you, like, live in an area like LA or something like that, and then they take it and make it a show 6 months later. Son of a bitch!
Where's the proof? I don't know, I don't possess.
My debit card! Oh, that was our good writer's room food meal ticket for a while. Thank you for that as well. Oh,
these
god.
These are the unfortunate modern problems.
You know what, though? I bet you $10 that someone listening has had that happen or known someone that has had that happen to them. I bet you cash money, sir.
And to that person, if that scenario has ever happened, they have my deepest, deepest sympathies, to be sure.
Write us in, you know, just, you know, tweet at us or something like that. Let us know if you're out there.
Sure. And then therein, though, lies the possibly the greatest indie film ever. So they're documenting their own sort of trials and tribulations as their great idea becomes a mega blockbuster, as they're sitting there eating top ramen wondering, damn it, there's my sketchbook, god damn it.
You know, this is like, basically, we would make this movie, Thomas. You and I would make this movie. And you know what happened? We get sued because they're like, isn't that modern day Big Fat Liar? Oh, fuck!
I'm not familiar with that, but I'll have to look into that.
Really? You don't know Big Fat Liar?
I don't.
Oh my god, it stars the kid from Malcolm in the Middle. The kid who played Malcolm. I can't remember his name at the moment. But it started him, and he was just younger, I think, right after Malcolm in the Middle. He was in Hollywood. He put together this fun little story for a film script, right? Wrote it out, and he gets a ride from this snobby little director, sort of, or producer, really. And the producer steals his notebook. And then he makes the movie, and then he uses other people in Hollywood that the guy producer fucked over at Universal Studios. And he hides out in a prop warehouse and stuff like that, too. And it's the girl from, oh my god, not That's So Raven, The Amanda Show from Nickelodeon. So it stars her, and it's them two, like, getting revenge and stuff like that. So there's, like, a special effects guy, there's practical effects guy, there's stunt artist and a helicopter, all fucking up his life, and he gets dyed blue because they put blue, like, hair dye in his hair gel and shit like that, and so he's, like, blue for a while, and they make his movie, and the producer's trying to make the movie. It's a huge battle going on.
So what I'm to take away from this is basically a revenge fantasy made manifest, because this probably did happen to somebody going, if only I had these crazy James Bondy assets to make my revenge come true.
Yeah. It's true. It's true.
It's that moment where any one of us has been like, man, I wish I had a better scriptwriter, because I wish I'd have said this. I wish I'd have done this. Well, you didn't, sucker, but now let's make a movie of it. And we'll act like we did. It'll be great.
My name is Andrew, and I am the host of a show called Rage Hunter. And on Rage Hunter, we cover the latest news and what's trending in the gaming industry with just a hint of some sarcasm and rage. You probably have this hole, you know, this void in your life that you don't know how to fill. Well, Rage Hunter is going to fill it. And the best part is we are everywhere. iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Play Store, Spotify, Podbean, Instagram, Twitter. So that way you can get as much rage in your life as possible. And some news while you're at it. So come check us out and be a part of the greatest gaming podcast in the universe. See you there.
Oh my god. Meanwhile, there's probably a writer out there too who's like, man, being a writer, like, there's just, it's just so many things with it that there's people were relating hardcore on this, because I will get the emails or the texts or the messages on social media saying I related hard to that, like I usually do, and it's gonna be a whole lot of people this episode. Fuck.
Well, I think everybody, regardless of whether you've had something like
Big Fat Liar.
become made manifest as a billion-dollar temple, or just the idea that there's so many people out there right now with so many similar influences making stuff that eventually there's these crazy confluences where this person and this person have enough similar influences that they actually came up with a similar idea. And by God, it's maddening. But it does happen.
Don't tell me that, sir. Don't tell me that. Because now I'm afraid for all my indie concept ideas I just pitched to like 7 different comic book companies. Fuck.
Well, no, see, because the only thing you can do and take as a consolation is just get yours out there first.
That's true.
Because the truth of the matter is that if you don't, somebody will. And when they do, you'll be like, damn it, I had that, but I waited 6 months too long.
So, Thomas, what you're telling me is I must be Shane from The Walking Dead and shoot Otis in the knee, is what you're telling me.
Oh, I think they frown on that. I think there's certain legalities.
Metaphorically! Metaphorically! Not literally!
Of course,
NSA. Of course, yes. Yes.
I don't know where my career went off track, but there was that violent assault.
I gotta, like...
Well, perhaps you should have rethought your choices at the time, son. The guy...
No, sir, it was good. I used a whole gun in there to shoot everyone in the knee in the writer's room. Well, he's still in the writer's room. I didn't think it through.
Well, I'm sorry at this point. As a writer, your forethought and foreshadowing skills suck because you didn't see how this was going to play out. I think you need to rethink your career options.
We cut to, like, a room somewhere, and they're like, but this is D&D, man! Oh, yeah, shit. I forgot I wasn't at work. I was just creating something here.
Oh. You seem like such a nice man. Bananas.
Went chaotic neutral. We knew it was the end from there. His character just murdered somebody.
A little into the evil range of this one. I'm just going to say it right now. Not to be judgmental or anything, but my medical bill sucked from that. It was really not good.
Oh, God. I digress, man. Jeez. So, Thomas, man.
These things happen.
It's true. Somebody take this and turn this into an animated skit, please. It would be so amazing. So amazing to take this. Thomas, man, I gotta ask, because I like to ask it. What is your... You know definitely I like to ask this on the show as a person who binged it more than people do on Netflix, like Teenage Girls and Chocolate Ice Cream on Bad Breakup Days. Now, yeah, it's true, they do happen. Now, where did you, like, start, man? Like, how did you start being an artist? Like, I always love hearing people's origin stories because, to me, they matter.
I will say that I am a third generation working artist in my family.
Holy shit.
My grandfather was a man by the name of Charles Cairns, and he was a painter and illustrator for magazines and the like. My mother was a woman named Abby Willeroot, and she was a jeweler and sculptor. And she worked as a jeweler and sculptor for the better part of 40 to 50 years. And so then when I was growing up, arts were around my house all the time. And my parents they never did that. Like, why don't you get a real job? Fortunately. So the fact that I was a humongous comic book nerd and animation nerd back as a kid, I was like, man, I love comics. I want to draw this kind of stuff and whatever.
Well, how old are you, though, is the thing. Like,
how old am I?
Yeah, what age are you talking about when you're saying this? Are you talking like
I'm
55?
I'm as old as my tongue and slightly older than my teeth. However, in numbers, that would be about 51.
Only 51?
Only.
That's Yonsha, I tell you.
Oh, I'm only slightly older than Baby Yoda.
Oh, dear God, that's true.
So,
my dad's on the...
That being said, but So when I was a kid, I wanted to do comics. But by the time I got out of art school, I was looking for work, and a friend of mine said, you know, I know some guys who I went to school with, and they do animation. Maybe you'd like to talk to some of them. And turns out there's a whole career in animation I didn't really realize was a thing, because at that point in my life, I thought it was all farmed out. I thought they'd shipped it overseas, and nobody did anything over here, and who knew? Because I didn't go to school for animation. And turns out there was a whole industry that I was unaware of, and so I made some phone calls, and people gave me some names to recruiters, and then I did the long search for a job. And instead of going to comics, I ended up going to animation. And I will say that I have been doing it now for about 23 years. And I've enjoyed it greatly. I mean, I've had a chance to meet a lot of my heroes in the nerd world. I've got to work on a lot of things that, for me as a childhood nerd, were bucket listy kind of things. I've worked on a few Batman cartoons. I've worked on a Green Lantern cartoon. Done some Marvel stuff. And so I will say that as a guy who grew up reading about these characters, so the idea to get to actually play in with that toy box of characters to do stuff for animation was a lot of fun.
What was the top three characters you think you had growing up? Like, I'm curious on this because this determines a person. What?
Sure. No, well, see, the thing is I was sort of a comics omnivore because back as a kid in the 70s and the 80s, your ability to fine-tune, focus what you're going to get where I lived anyway was a tougher thing because you just had the spinner rack. So you're like, okay, well, what's at the spinner rack at the market? Oh, well, there's this and there's this and there's this. So I probably started off with your Superman and your Batman because that was readily available and Batman's cool. Superman's cool.
You like Batman more?
I moved on to things like the X-Men and the Legion of Superheroes and the Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol too?
Huh?
I've never heard anybody on the show that said that they read Doom Patrol.
Oh, dude, Doom Patrol, because Doom Patrol is like DC's X-Men.
It's true. Oh, it's true, yeah. But I just never hear anybody talk about it.
I think if chronologies are correct, it actually might be the X-Men or Marvel's Doom Patrol. But, I read Hot Stuff and Richie Rich and Casper. And I read all kinds of stuff. So I just love comics as a whole. I'm not a Marvel guy or a DC guy. I'm sort of like an omnivore for comics. As I get older, I as much as I enjoy the big two, I love a lot of indie stuff because you get unexpected kind of stories happening. You can get all kinds of interesting things you wouldn't normally get because they don't have to be episodic.
Yeah,
they can end in six issues and it's okay.
Yeah,
they can end in one issue, it's okay. You know, whatever. So you know, I became a fan of things like Atomic Robo. Because there's these weird little stories about a robot going through a history.
It's true.
Force gumping his way through adventures, kind of like, you know. Huge fan of Mignola's work. And have been since I first read his stuff. He did like some Michael Moorcock adaptations, like Quorum, which were pretty great. And of course, Hellboy and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. You know, just a name,
this little book, this little book.
Not too big of a deal here. Hellboy.
You know, there's so many comics. It's hard for me to pick just one. They're like, oh, these are my favorite.
I'm with you on that. I 100%. I feel you, Thomas. And we're part of a rare breed of people these days, apparently. Because
the thing is I as a fan, I don't feel like my opinion has to define anybody else's. So I'm like, some days I want to read some manga stuff. Some days I want to read French comics. Some days I want to read American comics.
Yeah, it's like it's all over the place, and that's the best way to go. I'm 22, and I have the mentality of as I get older. Well, I'm turning 23 in like a couple months, but you know, I take a look upon it like indie comics rock. Like I read so much that if I took a account of how much I spend at a comic store a year, I could buy a small house. Like I'll be honest here.
It's easy to do.
God, yes, indie. When you include indie, like I was only the big two growing up with media with. You know, just reading to where I could at the time. And then when I moved to Phoenix, it was whole that big thing there where we had the comic stores all over the place. And now, you know, it's so crazy, I think, the amount of books you can read and the amount of stories you can tell. Like, you never know what you're going to fucking read. You do not because, you know, you get the big two. But I love indie books because of how much depth they can grab. Like, the best two indie books I've read recently are two books. Well, the whole series of, because, you know, there's so many. But actually, I'll give it the best three. Saga's one, DMZ, and then Fables.
Those are all fine books. Those are all very good books, I will say. They're visually interesting. They're telling different kinds of stories, and that's cool. I will say the other thing about indie comics that I find appealing is you have different perspectives now because you have you know, all kinds of people making comics. It's not just a bunch of white dudes making comics. It's not just a bunch of whatever.
There's
all kinds of people making comics.
It's true.
They're like, they want to tell whatever story they want to tell, and because it's out there, you can read it. And you're like, well, that's cool. That's a story I might not have heard before.
Yeah.
book, a series of books, I think there's about three of them right now, that I really like, and it's totally not my wheelhouse, I would have thought by the name, but it's called Fantasy Sports by Sam Bosma. And it's amazing because it's, imagine the adventures of these two wizards, and they go off and have these odd adventures in this fantasy world, and it usually ends up in some kind of weird tournament that's based on one sport or another. One was based on doing basketball against mummy kings, and there was one that was like...
What?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. There are these large, hardbound books, and they're astoundingly cool.
Where has this been my entire life? What, as a huge monster fan, what the hell? This is amazing.
Right, no, exactly. So it's just, somebody has an idea, they're like, you know, I want to mash up wizards and sports and make an adventure story. Well, okay, fine. And it's out there. You can read it.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break for you guys today. Do you guys like reading comics? Obviously, if you listen to the show, you do. What the fuck am I talking about? Then you guys, if you're in Arizona, which a good majority of the fan base is, shout out to the ones in Canada though, you guys can go to Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, located at 5801 West Glendale Avenue in Glendale, Arizona. I gotta say, folks, I've been going here for a long time now. I've been to a few different comic book stores in Arizona in my 6 years of living here so far, and this may change due to the recording nature, but whatever. So I love going to Drawn to Comics. I really do. Ken, who runs it, is amazing, fucking laid-back dude. He's a wonderful guy. He's been on the show, ladies and gentlemen, before. And it's a really fun place to pick up the book. So Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona. Get yourself a box, you know. Go in, maybe just check it out. It's a fun place to escape into. His work, all the workers there are fucking wonderful folks. They really are. It's just like family at this point, at least they're for me. And it's a fun world to go into. There's collectibles there. There's toys. There's comics. You know, and you just get your box and reserve some books and whatnot. We've had people on the show who've written and drawn comics, you know. Go in and pick up their work, folks. Jesus Christ. It ain't that difficult. So go to Drawn the Comics in Glendale, Arizona, folks. You guys can check them out also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks, everyone. Now back to the show.
You know, Hilda and her adventures, like Hilda and the Midnight Giant or this or that. It's now a Netflix show. Or somebody's show. I forget when it's on. But those are cool little stories.
There's Umbrella Academy now. That's a really damn good show. Like, you have everything about this. Basketful of Heads is a good horror one, by the way. Really good one. Yeah. It's such a good book. There's Undiscovered Country going on right now. There's all this stuff. We're really dating the podcast, by the way, when naming all these books. that was a long time ago. In 1925. That was 2019. Oh. Oh,
old
man.
Old bastards. But they're dead now.
All of them. That Thomas fellow especially. Yes, he was Baby Yoda age during that time. Oh, Baby Yoda, I remember that. Remember Baby Darth Maul? Oh, I remember that one too. Good days.
That was 3 or 4 memes ago. Well, actually, let's face it, if it's that far in the future, it'd be hundreds and hundreds of memes ago.
Thousands. Someone posted a meme. I don't know who the hell it was. I looked at it today because, full discretion, I'll put it in the intro. You know, this is the last day of 2019 when we're recording this. There was someone in there like, if you want to know how far we've come, here's a meme from 2011. And it was a cartoon of, 2009 being kicked out by a 10. Like, the number, they had faces on him and whatnot. And he looks all sad and dejected. And they're like, the time has come. And then it was like soon, and it was like 2011 on the bottom or something like that. And it was like, had an evil face and such. And it's like, wow, I remember that. Oh, God.
It goes by fast.
Oh, it does. We evolve as a culture with memes sometimes.
Well, and you have so many people contributing at all times they evolve like virally fast.
It's true. Now, we're halfway through the show here, man. I gotta ask you about this because I'm really curious what it's like. Because obviously, by now, if you're fans listening don't know, you're a Batman fan.
Yes, I am.
You've had so much fun times with the Batman mythos. What has that been like for you? Like, I get very curious because there's so many dream jobs of mine in the comic book industry of series I want to touch. Not sexually, but
it was great fun to get, first of all, to be invited to do it. The first Batman cartoon I got to work on was called The Batman, and that was headed up by an animation artist, Jeff Matsuda, and he developed the style for that show. And fortunately, I had worked with Jeff on Jackie Chan Adventures back in the day. And so when Batman came up, he invited me to come and partake in that show too. And I felt very lucky to do that. So I got to do that for about 3 seasons. And it was a lot of fun.
I have something to admit.
Film is a Batman vs. Dracula, which was a direct-to-video kind of thing as well with that series. And that was fun.
There is something I have to admit to you, Thomas. Mm-hmm. That is my childhood cartoon right there. If I'm dating myself, I really have to put it out there because that was on the list of things I was like, and it kind of slipped past my mind that you did that show because I started out, my first show was Batman Beyond.
Batman Beyond's a great show.
Oh my God. But where I learned about a lot of Batman mythos characters was the Batman. And that made me fall in love with the character even more. Like, so much from that show. I loved it with a passion. So, like, when I saw you were on Patch, I was like,
thank you for watching. We greatly appreciate it.
It's so iconic. It's a show that deserves more recognition, in my opinion. You know, maybe I'm biased. I don't know.
The Batman for fans was a tough thing to sell because it was the first, as far as I'm aware, and I can be mistaken, but as far as I'm aware, it was the first non-Bruce Timm Batman show. And the Bruce Timm Batman shows were fantastic, and they have quite a lineage because they branched into the Superman show and the Justice League show and all that whole universe, including Batman Beyond. So you have all these different worlds that spun out of the Batman Adventures by Bruce Timm. And fans had a deep love of that. So when the Batman came out, it was just different enough that fans were very divided.
Really?
They were hugely divided. Because it was not their Batman. It wasn't the Batman that they wanted to see more of.
I mean,
which is funny
it.
Because by the time the show ended, it had gotten some legs under it and people did support it. But I think in the initial beginning, the shock of it being as different from the Bruce Timm version as it was problematic for a lot of fans who just wanted a lot more of the other stuff. Now, the thing that was funny from the perspective of those of us making the show is that we're all big Bruce Timm fans. So we're making this show, but we love the Bruce Timm stuff. But the fans, of course, think that we're horrible monsters because we've destroyed their childhood and we've done this and we've done that. And in fact, on the internet, somebody who is far more hyperbole than is probably warranted had said that we as a crew were actually, and I'm not sure they know what this word actually means, but they said that we were actually worse than the Nazis. Now,
what?
It's a cartoon, and B, we love the Bruce Timm stuff.
I could tell.
And we didn't euthanize anybody. So yeah. I think that that was an interesting thing where that cartoon maybe didn't get as much love as it could because it was such a startling departure from other things that people were like, whoa, you can't deviate from the pattern. But since then, there have been so many different takes on Batman in animation. True. That I think it opened it up a little bit, whatever. But I mean, there's been so many great, like, you know, Batman, like direct videos and series that have come since then. That it's now fans aren't as shocky about those things. Not that they can't get a little, like, you know, uptight about change or whatever, but I think that was a series that really, for the Batman stuff, was a big turning point. But it was a lot of fun to work on, and I really enjoyed my stint doing it with Jeff Matsuda and Jose Lopez, who were the two character guys on that show.
It's iconic. Like, I love that you say that you guys are fans of Bruce Timm, because obviously who's not? But there is lot of aesthetics.
Hold up there.
What you got?
You'll be surprised.
Really? Get the fuck out.
Okay, here's the funny thing. And I haven't delved into this anti-fandom, so I don't know much about it. But for years, as an artist working on action shows, there's always the inevitable comparison of, like, it's cool. Your show's cool. It's not Bruce Timm cartoon cool, but it's cool. And as a fan of Bruce Timm, so I'm like, oh, that's fair. Okay, cool. I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get where you're going with it. That's great. And I had not worked on a Bruce Timm show until I was invited to come and work on Green Lantern. I was super stoked. I'm not going to lie to you. Because for the first time in my life, I would get to work on a show where the commentary wouldn't be like, it's cool, but it's not Bruce Timm cartoon cool. And I'm like, I'm going to be on a Bruce Timm show. It's so exciting.
And you're like, they can all shut up.
I'm a huge nerd, right? So suddenly, I made the mistake of looking at the internet. Don't ever look on the internet. But I looked on the internet, and when they were talking about announcing the Green Lantern show, and I discovered something I didn't know existed. People who were not fans of Bruce Timm in a violent fashion, and they would just talk smack about their designs. And I was like, dudes, all this time, and I'm finally on one of these shows, and you guys roll up. What the hell's wrong? God damn it.
You can't win. That's what you learned. Like, I can never win.
You just got to do your thing.
Yeah.
And don't look at the internet. It's fandom is a funny thing because you're always going to be on the wrong side of somebody's fandom.
They're always
going to have something very interesting to say about your stuff, both positive or negative.
It's true. Oh, yeah, it's true. But you know what I got to say to the people who, like, maybe dog on the Batman? You know what? They gave us the best damn Clayface story that we've ever had.
I will say the Clayface story in Arizona was pretty good with Ethan Bennett having his problems and whatnot.
Yeah,
I thought it was pretty cool.
It was awesome.
I got to draw a lot of him, so I enjoyed it quite a lot.
Who was your favorite character on the Batman to do?
Oh, it was so much fun stuff to draw. I had a lot of fun doing Dracula and the DTV stuff.
Now what about
Clayface? Was a lot of fun to draw.
Yeah.
Because he's morphing all the time, so you could make him do things like turn his hands into hammers or do this or do that.
Yeah.
I will say, though he doesn't get as much love and sometimes gets a bit of hate, I love what Jeff did with the Joker, where he's got the straight jacket and the whatnot like that.
It's iconic.
I think that was pretty neat.
Yeah, that stands out. You know, that stands out as a Joker, and it makes sense.
The thing that Jeff was able to do that I thought was pretty cool with the show was that he was able to try and do his own spin on things, because when you, as a character designer, you may have a million different ideas what to do with a franchise, but you got to realize at the end of the day, there's only so far you can push a franchise out of the comfort zone before corporate powers go, but this isn't really our brand anymore, we don't want to do that, whatever. So if you get an opportunity to reinvent a character, you should do your best and do something fun with it, because that opportunity doesn't always come along.
It's true.
Very often. So I mean, there was a lot of stuff that I think that the crew got to do with Batman that was a lot of fun.
You have another one too that's out now, if I remember correctly. You worked on the Quinn show?
The which one?
The Harley Quinn show?
I did some help on the Harley Quinn show. Mm-hmm. I just did some structural things. Like I worked on like technical things. Because I was not in house at Warner Brothers at the time, and so they said, "Hey Perkins, we need some help with mouth charts, or we need this kind of creature, or that kind of thing, or whatever." But I was not in house on that, so it was more like a Wednesday afternoon. Hey, I needed this. Okay, cool. I'll draw that for you, and then whatever.
That's still cool though. That's still amazing. That you still got to work. One, you get to work on it, but two, you still get to work, and three, you know, you still get to create something that's part of a big fandom right now.
I won't complain. I enjoy it greatly. I mean, that the fun thing about being in my profession is the ability to have little touches on things or this or that. Even if you work on something where you develop something and then it goes to a totally different studio and they do a different thing with it, you still are part of the DNA of whatever that is. You got to have a hand in doing something with it. And the thing about animation is it is a hugely collaborative team effort. So there, unless you are the show creator and you spawn this pitch and whatever, you're part of a team. And so you get to work with all these different people with all these different talents. And hopefully you learn something at each production that helps you be a better artist, because you get to see different perspectives on things and different ways to approach a problem and to solve a design issue or whatever. So even doing small things on a show is a lot of fun, because that's just one more one more thing you get to play with.
Yeah, I love it, though. I love hearing that it's a team effort on there and that you know that and roll with it and love it, because there's a lot of people who I meet, I'm not going to name names, and a lot of people, you know, I hear about, too, who don't realize it's a team effort. Animation is such hard work. As a guy who may or may not be working on a cartoon right now, it's such a hard work. I just dropped that like nonchalant to be like, you can't get me in trouble. Fuck you.
There you go. Well, the thing is I look every day like I have a team of people I'm working with right now. And the fact that we all get to work together on a project and we all get to make something and try and make each other laugh or do this or do that, yeah, and try and bring the best out in each other, because you know, especially if you're working on a drawing or this or that, you may be so close to it that you're missing something that you could either fix or you could do better or whatever, and then have the input of the rest of the team go, hey, but have you thought of this, or hey, that's a little off, or hey, there's this and that, because in the end it all comes together to make a better thing. It's kind of like, as mentioned in your last podcast, where your fellow there was talking about having good editors and how it makes the whole thing better. Yeah. And it's to be said for animation and its team, too, because everybody's working together to try and make the best show. Like, nobody's going, today is the day I will undermine my show and cause havoc in a Game of Thronesian kind of way. It's like,
no Lannisters here. No Lannisters here. We don't accept Lannisters in this room.
There's none of that. So you want to get it to work together. And the truth is making a TV show, as I'm sure you're well aware, is a Herculean undertaking.
Oh, fuck.
You know, it's an amazing, like, no one person could do it by themselves. And if they could, they probably are from Krypton and they don't sleep and they can fly really fast.
And they have zero stress. Or they smoke a lot of weed to combat all the stress. You know, Willie Nelson, there you go.
That's another method entirely. It also may work or not. He's so relaxed, he didn't draw anything. This is a problem. We need to find power.
I'm hoping it's not the alcoholism, because you know, I'd rather not take that as a stress reliever there, you know.
No, none of those things work. For me, personally, the thing I use as a stress reliever is just to draw more stuff.
That's perfect.
Until you can't get sleep. I work all day, I draw cartoons, and then I come home and I draw more stuff for me.
That's not bad. That's the best way to do it, man. That's honestly the best. I love it. Because, you know, if you're always creating and you're always entertaining your brain, you can be 80 years old, Thomas. I'm picturing you right now. You're 80 years old, so in 2 years, according to you.
Exactly. 5 years ago.
Yes. So 5 years ago, my memory is still good. What do you draw? I need a sticky note. Nurse, sticky note. Help.
Give me a shopping stat.
Does he know we went digital like 20 years ago?
Young people don't understand the pain and struggle. Get me a Sharpie and a legal pad right now. It's going to be the craziest thing ever.
You went from hardcore British, like everyday Londonite, to like Game of Thrones Starkian real fast.
Hey, you know, when the blood gets up, you don't know.
It's true. It's all over the place. You know, I've been watching a lot of Critical Role, catching up on that right now. I feel you on it, man. I feel you on it. Now, I don't know how best to put this. I'm going to give you a throwback, Thomas.
Go ahead.
Because I want to say thank you. I don't know how much you've worked on this product. I don't know. It was my first ever cartoon I ever watched and started the fandom I'm not going to give it away, that started the fandom to led me to now. And I kind of hinted at it a little bit with stuff my grandma and I used to watch. Now, if I remember correctly here, you worked on Godzilla the series.
I did. I was very lucky. That was my second job in animation ever.
Really?
It was. And so I had transitioned off of Extreme Ghostbusters.
Oh,
and the team I was with.
Name drop.
Huh?
Just a little name drop right there.
Exactly. Well, we as a team went from that show to Godzilla. And Godzilla, the monsters in that show were designed by my mentor at the time, Phil Barlow,
who
is an Australian artist who did animation and comic books and the like. And he was kind enough to invite me to come and leave Ghostbusters when it was completed to go work on Godzilla. And it was a lot of fun. So on Godzilla, I would do a lot of people running in terror from kaijus.
As you do.
And in fact, if you look at the main title sequence of that show, a lot of the crowds in there I designed as they look up in horror and they react to Godzilla running around or whatever. But it was a lot of fun. I got to do some villainous humans who would try and thwart Godzilla's ambitions for a peaceful life. But that was one of my favorite early memories because we, like say for instance, back when that we were preparing for that, mm-hmm. We were trying to figure out what Godzilla looked like because it was so under wraps. Like you can't know these things.
Even for the cartoon?
Right, but we're we have to storyboard. We have to do whatever.
You have to make the cartoon.
What are we going to do? We have nothing to work from. So fortunately, we got a chance to see it at the Creature Studio.
Ooh.
And that was pretty exciting. So we did some sketches and whatnot like that. And at one point, which was pretty exciting, is we got to see this... This hydraulically powered animatronic, this humongous, like from the waist up.
Oh my god, man! Your child is jealous. Godzilla. Oh my god, my heart.
And it was the neatest thing ever. They say, "Hey, you want to see some cool?" And they open the door, and we go back out of the studio into this big open hangar deck area, and there was this thing, Jeez. And they were turning it on. It's coming to life and whatever.
Jeez.
And they were about to do something with it. I forget what. And one of the techs was like, "Hey, you want to see something really cool?" I'm like, shh, give me another than this? And then he lets loose with, he flips a switch and the classic Godzilla roar echoes through this place. And it's so loud you can feel your sternum vibrate.
Oh, God.
Like, oh. So you're looking up at this big animatronic monster and the Godzilla roar happens. And it's like, that's pretty cool.
Wait, did I die? It's like, what happened?
And I know that a lot of people do not love the Broderick Godzilla movie. Yeah,
fuck them.
And fair enough, like, I understand your points.
Yeah.
But for me, I will always have a soft spot for it because I got to work for a year on a Godzilla cartoon based on that. And as a child who grew up in the 70s watching all the Toho films and whatnot like that on Saturday afternoon TV, you know, your Godzillas and your Jet Jaguars and your King Ghidorahs and whatever.
I say that looking at Jet Jaguar on my backpack right now in the studio, yes.
Right on! The thing was, getting to work on that cartoon was an early bucket list thing for me. My parents were super stoked. I called my mom and dad and said, "Dad, Mom, I'm working on a Godzilla cartoon." They're like, "Really?" Go figure, right? Our kid working on a Godzilla cartoon? Who would have guessed? But it was a great fun. That year was a great year for me. I got to it was some small part in the Godzilla lineage, a much maligned part of the Godzilla lineage, but a part of it nonetheless. And I will say, as a Godzilla fan, I can see where people have their issues.
Yeah, but, the series, you know, though, that TV show, that cartoon made up for it because it was so, well, I thought it was better and I loved it so much more.
Well, I think we tried to introduce more Godzilla-isms into it. Like, he actually breathed fire, and he'd fight all kinds of kaijus and things, which the other creature never got to do. I mean, you know, I heard rumors that they were thinking of doing more films. I don't know if that's true or not. I can't speak to the veracity of those rumors. But for me growing up, Godzilla was always Godzilla versus somebody else.
Yeah.
So the fact you had a Godzilla that didn't breathe fire and didn't burst anybody, I'm like, And then you had the baby thing happen, and I said, well, it felt more like Jurassic Park than it felt like Godzilla.
Yeah.
But I think our cartoon tried to kind of bring more of the Godzillaism into it. You had your kaiju of the week and whatnot like that.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun. I'm glad you watched it.
You enjoyed it. That was my first cartoon. That was honestly my first cartoon was that. And that's why I like that. It introduced me to the Godzilla fandom, led me to work in paleontology because I was a huge monster fan of this day. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but right now I work on Operation Kaiju Shield. It's a story I pitched to an indie comic book company, SGGS Comics, and I'm writing it currently. And one of the monsters we face early on and the issues that currently our main characters are because it's Kaiju meets Vietnam War, is the I call them Beetoids. and they are a complete Easter egg nod towards Godzilla the series, towards the big kaiju that were in that series.
Nice.
I'm like, I gotta pay tribute somehow. Like, okay, let's do this sort of thing here. Let's, you know, pay tribute. Like, Giant B, like, where'd you get that idea? Is it your own? Like, no, Godzilla the series, bitch. And people are like, oh, well, he's stupid. He likes a stupid cartoon. No, get out of here.
Well, the thing about cartoons and any popular media, as far as I'm concerned, I've come to this point of view over the years, is that you know, some cartoons just aren't for everybody, and that's
true.
Okay.
It's true.
You know, it's like because people out there can get very like, this sucks, that's great, whatever, and yeah. I'm not saying they're wrong. They may in fact be correct. However, you know. Somebody out there, for somebody out there, whatever cartoon you're talking about, whatever comic you're talking about, that's their thing. They're like, dude, did you read the latest issue of Richie Rich? Now, most people like Richie Rich for real. Some people dig it. I'm like, right on. And for those people, I'm glad they enjoy it. And for the guy who's making it and getting paid for it, right on, dude. You have a fan base.
The best.
That's awesome.
Dude, I when you say Richie Rich, I'm thinking like, nah, there's one even better that you're like, wow, there's no fans for that. Is Archie Meets the Predator.
Dude.
There's so many.
I hear tell it's actually a good book. I heard a review of it on another podcast. I was like, really?
Yeah.
That's a thing?
They keep trying to get me to read it.
It is.
There's so many people. Oh.
Well, it seems to me like the Archie comics have reinvented themselves in a million different ways. They've got a whole multiverse of their own, from what I understand.
They do. Yeah, they do.
And I've heard nothing but good things about them. I confess, I have not read Archie comics in a bit. Like, you know, when they were superheroes and whatnot back in the day. But, that being said, I'm very glad they're out there and there's people who dig them, because the truth is that there's stuff for everybody.
There is. Oh, there is. I want to blow your mind real fast. Speaking of Archie, someone a few episodes ago told me this, and I looked into it, and it's true. Now, I don't know if they're still together. Archie's dating Sabrina.
Check that out.
That's awesome. Oh, and not the Sabrina, the teen, like the one for the new Netflix series, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, like where the devil raped her boyfriend and killed him. Not that one. This is like innocent Sabrina.
That seems like that would be an awkward thing for Archie.
Oh God, you know, but you know, no, it's the Chilling Sabrina. I do need to read that comic series. Now, I kind of want to say it on air a little bit here. Is I want to give a shout out to Alan Maxson, who was on the Film World podcast, and also Kirk Carley, because speaking of Godzilla as a kaiju fan and as a guy who worked on the 98 franchise a little bit, I actually got to talk to the guy who did the suit performance for the babies and Mamazilla on the film.
Nice.
So I would check that out. You would really incredibly enjoy it.
I will definitely check that out. I've been mostly listening to your comic chronicle, but I will check out the other.
Oh, and I gotta give a shout out to Alan, because he was the right head of King Ghidorah in King of the Monsters recently. He's a good friend of mine too. So
right on.
You know, huge kaiju love. Cool. Huge kaiju love on that show, man. But
That film, by the way, that latest Godzilla movie was the stuff. It was like the reincarnation of all the stuff I grew up watching as a kid in the 70s. I was like, oh my gosh, so cool.
As a 70s fan, I want to let you in on a little bit of news I don't know if you know about. So Toho, right? After the MonsterVerse is done, when the MonsterVerse is done making the movies in the next couple of years, so then the licensing is up. Toho's making Godzilla movies again. They're making a MonsterVerse with all the monsters in one universe. Kind of like the MonsterVerse we got right now, but they're going to be the classic Toho designs. Maybe they're changed up a little bit, but then the classic Toho kaiju with their similar designs to the classic stuff there in one universe.
That would be pretty exciting.
Oh.
That would be very exciting.
Oh, I can't wait for it.
I heard rumors at one point they were talking about taking the Shin Godzilla thing and moving that kind of thing forward. I think that would be interesting too, because as terrifying as that Godzilla is, if you had like a Shin Ghidorah, whatever, like
they do, there is one. There is. Google it. It's part of like this Neon Genesis world, part of Universal or something like that, in Universal Japan, I think it is, or Universal Tokyo, somewhere along those lines. It's part of a ride, and I think they made a toy of it, too, that they actually, those plans were real, they ended it, but they still put Shin Ghidorah, and he's fucking terrifying. He's so scary. It's bad. Oh, you will be terrified, because I like, oh my God, thank God that wasn't in a new movie, because there'd be so many screaming kids, like, ah, kill it! Oh, dear Lord. Now, we're coming to the end of the show here, man, because I don't want to take too much of your time here today, but I got to say, Thomas, it's been a blast having you on.
Well, very, very kind of you to take time out to chat. And like I said, if you had any questions you wanted to ask, I'm definitely down. But thank you so much for your time. And like I said, I'm a fan of your show, so it was nice to chat to you.
Of course, I'm a fan with you too. Like, and you know, as we near the end of your show here, I gotta ask: is there anything you want to promote? I usually tell people promote away, plug yourself before you wreck yourself.
Well, were I not in the precarious nature I'm at, where I have a couple projects that I'm desperately trying to put forward, but I can't speak about them at this point, and I don't want to jinx them either.
Yeah.
So all I can say is that when I have something cool to announce, I will definitely give you a yell.
Cool. Where can people follow you at, good man?
They can be found at thomasperkinsart.com or tnperkins4 on Instagram.
Sweet. This is probably a tough question, because I'm very curious on this. This is probably a tough question, and you may get this one a lot. I don't know. I don't want to be that one fan, if I'm not already. But the final thing I want to ask you, Thomas, is when you're designing a character, what do you bring to it? What is your little mojo? What's a Thomas Flavor Flav that you bring to it? Because I'm curious, because I'm really interested in knowing that. And I was going to pass over, but I'm like, no, I got to ask him this. Well, I got you on the phone here.
I will say that's a really tough question. There's a whole thesis in that. So, but I will say that the thing that I just try to do is I try to have fun with the idea of, like, if this creature or this person or whatever were a real person. But at the same point, I don't want to get too dark or too grim or too this or too that. Not that I can't do those things, but I try to look at the world. I try to look at different kinds of mythology, different kinds of art history, different kinds of whatever, to see what best suits the requirements of any given character, you know, given whatever script we're working on or the like. And the thing is that process changes depending on if I'm doing something for, you know, a sketch commission for somebody versus if I'm doing a show where the script has very specific requirements. But even so, there's always a little bit of research to be done. There's always something to think about. So I try to keep in mind what's important to the personality that you're trying to create and then move forward with that. And I know that that's probably true for every artist who's working in the business or any other kind of field. But I think what I bring to it is probably the same thing that any other artist brings to it, is that the wealth of whatever you feed your brain with inevitably kind of drains into the work you're doing. So
okay.
For me, I like a lot of French comics. I like a lot of Japanese comics. I like a lot of, you know, like Prince of Mobius is a huge influence for me. Miyazaki is a huge influence for me.
Oh my god, these names are like breaking my heart. They're making my heart jump out. Like, oh my god, this is amazing. They're good influences.
So those things kind of feed my imagination and inspire me. But I mean, there's young indie comics people today whose names may escape me. I'm going, wow, how they handled that thing is really cool, or how they did that is really cool. So I'm always trying to look at art, both new and classic art, you know, art history stuff, like, you know, classical things you'd see in a museum, art history from around the world, whether you're looking at, like, different sculptures from African history, you look at stuff from Japan, you look at stuff, you know, from Mesoamerican stuff. There's all kinds of stuff to pull from, and it really all depends on what it is you're doing at the time.
I really love that. That's awesome, because there's a lot of artists who listen to the show, and I think a lot of people are going to take from that.
Well, I can only hope, but the thing is, I guess the important thing is just to have fun and try just look for different ways to do stuff.
That's it. That's the big thing right there, is have fun. Because if you're not having fun, why the hell are we doing what we do?
Precisely.
I mean, because, like, if you hated it, you wouldn't be drawing. I mean...
Well, I have met people in the business who are like, wow, you seem to like drawing. It's like, well, yeah, that's why I'm here. But as an artist, I've met artists who just do it professionally and they don't do it in their free time. And I've met people who do it all the time. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole spectrum of people that handle the arts and their relationship to it in their own way. And there's a whole spectrum of different answers to it. But early on, I decided that what was important for me was to never forget being that kid who just came home from, like, buying a comic book at the corner market and just drawing my heart out and whatever, and that joy that I had drawing whatever it was I was drawing that moment. Because when you're doing it, you're right in, you're in it. You're just, you're living that experience right there. Yeah. And you're trying to create that world. And so when I get home at night, I may work 12, 14 hours, 18 hours a day some days, but I make sure before I go to bed, even if it's a stupid post-it sketch, I draw something that is solely for me, because I did it because it was fun, because it was just, I just needed to get that out, because it's not something I need to get a note from somebody about, or somebody, I don't have to please a fan, or I don't have to please an executive or whatever. It's just, I feel like drawing this thing, boom, whatever it is. And I go to bed happy, so that when I get up the next day to draw for somebody else, I'm still excited to do it, because it's not the only outlet I have creatively, is my job. So I like, well, so when I hang up the phone, I'm going back to drawing stuff. So,
dude, I love it. I love it. You're living the dream, Thomas. You're really living the dream.
Well, one hopes. One hopes, dear fellow. One hopes. But I really appreciate your time today, and I hope all my prattle is to some good effort. And I hope that you have a lovely afternoon, sir.
You too, good man. And folks at home, before we end the show here, I do want to say, if you guys want to follow me, I'm at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram and at DakotaMorgan3. And before I end the recording, Thomas, any final words for our good fans at home or in the car, wherever they may listen?
Well, do what you love and have a good time with it and keep at it.
Amen to that. Alrighty, and to all the comic book fans out there and wherever you may be, stay classy.